Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the early rising voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew.
Indeed. Good morning.
It is the morning.
Good blooming morning.
This is a regular time for most people, Matthew. It's only the fact that you ordinarily wake up at 10, 10:30. Is that about fair?
That's not true, no.
Okay, what time do you normally wake up?
Between 8 and 9 is when I get up.
I mean, look, I'm just very wary that if I message you any time before 10:30, 11, I'm getting a single tick. So I'm questioning whether you're ever awake that early. Now, I'm one of these people that I'll get up about 6:30. So I think for us to start this today at 7, I don't think is unreasonable.
I guess not. Some people are up a lot earlier than that. But to actually start at 7:30, you've got me right up. And with regards to the single tick thing, you know, no electronics for the first 2 hours of the day.
Which is just strange.
It's not strange.
No, it's a little bit strange. I get that you want to get up. You want to have your cup of tea or whatever it is you do. I don't think you have a cup of tea. Fine. No, you don't. No. But I know that you want to get up. You go for a little walk, don't you?
I do.
You go for a walk. And I get that. No, I understand you might put your phone on airplane mode while you're asleep. I guess you do that. But come 9 o'clock, that's working hours. Surely 9 o'clock is when you then put your phone on. No?
Working hours to some, not all.
Okay, so is that now just a construct?
It also a government construct. It doesn't work so much, because if you do have a lie-in, I was to have a lie-in, for example, then yeah, I would. If I woke up at 10, my phone wouldn't be on until midday.
Okay, true.
But that's fine. We shouldn't be governed by our phones.
Okay, this is going to go down a very different path now, isn't it? We're going to start talking about how we're set up in such a way to do a 9-to-5, Monday to Friday, weekends off. Are we going to start going down that road?
Well, it's more so just the fact that you don't need to be distracted as soon as you wake up in the morning by what's going on in your phone, what's going on in the world. Just ease yourself into the day, which surely should bring us back to goalkeeping in some way, in terms of getting up early, getting yourself sorted, no?
I mean, we can try. It's going to be a tough one to link the two, but absolutely, let's try. Well, of course, ordinarily on a match day, let's bring us back to a match day where everyone's got different routines, but ordinarily you would get up, have your breakfast, go for a walk, a team walk. That would often be the case. I'm sure you guys listening in, regardless of the level, where possible, you go for a bit of a team walk, a bit of bonding, but also just to get some fresh air ready and then gradually build up so that come 3 o'clock, you're in peak state.
I guess the point here is that everyone has a different routine.
I guess that is.
And you don't mock those.
Absolutely.
You'll work to different ways of doing things, different needs.
We do indeed. Thank you. I feel like we're giving life lessons now.
We've got plenty coming up. Actually, not loads. We always say plenty. There's not loads coming up because it was, well, the Football League has finished now. The EFL is over, bar the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So we will be touching on the playoff semi-finals. And what a bunch of playoff semi-finals we had this season. They did not disappoint. And also the final day in the Premier League and a couple of keeper capers. But that is about it.
It is. What are we actually doing this summer? Are we going to be carrying this on every week, or
you've done this before?
I've done this, but I don't really know what the script is. It would be good to have a bit of a heads up.
Okay, I'll let you know, shall I?
So for now, we will just continue.
I'll pencil it into the routine.
Okay, fantastic. I guess we're gonna have to do it during the Euros.
Of course.
Okay, good. Yeah,
of course. We've got plenty coming up still in football. Playoff finals, Champions League final.
True.
Euros, like you said, all the transfer ins and outs.
Absolutely.
Our GKU review of the end of the season. Mm-hmm. That will happen too.
Excellent.
So just chill your bones.
Plenty to come. Okay.
Good. If you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so on Twitter at GKUnion, hello@goalkeepersunion.net, or on our phone number 07503673020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, so let's rifle through the Premier League. First up, Leicester 2, Tottenham 4. A couple of moments here regarding Kasper Schmeichel. The first goal from Harry Kane and the second one, which was the own goal. It was first thought that Davinson Sanchez had scored, but it was an own goal. Kasper wasn't happy with that one. And also the third, which he believed was a handball.
Yeah, so to go through them in no particular order, the third was a handball. I think you said to me the reason it wasn't given was that Harry Kane wasn't the actual goal scorer.
I believe so.
Yeah, I mean, the rules, they confused me at the best of times. I know that there was something in the rules regarding if there was a handball anywhere in the build-up, then ordinarily it would be disallowed. But I didn't realise it had to be the player that actually scored the goal. That in itself is crazy. You know, you kind of think of other situations where you can manipulate the situation potentially. But anyway, so yeah, I thought that was a handball. Absolutely. I thought that the first one, no chance. The first one's an interesting one where it goes through the legs. It obviously looks a bit awkward because he ends up sort of crumpling, trying to get a foot to the ball. But of course, if that goes just by his leg, you'd never question it. When it's fired in from 8 yards, he's absolutely caught it perfectly, and it's just fired past him before he could react. It's only the fact that it goes through his legs that we're even bringing it up on this podcast. But no, for me, absolutely no chance. But the one that I did want to talk about was the corner, which of course he comes for and unfortunately doesn't end up how he would have wanted it to. And it's a really, really interesting one, this one, for me, because it's one of the most difficult skills in goalkeeping, to punch a ball when it's coming in like that, almost going across the flight of the ball in order to protect yourself at the same time, time it absolutely perfectly to get the punch on the ball. Whereas if you don't, as was the case here, which by the way can happen for various reasons. So for instance, with this one here, where he's coming out, he has got a slight nudge. Now, is it enough to be a foul? Well, I think that's up for debate, because how much contact does it need to be on a goalkeeper for it to be a foul? Does it affect him? Yeah, it does. You know, when he goes to then make the punch, he's ever so slightly off because of the contact. And we're talking centimetres, millimetres. You know, if he times this ever so slightly differently, this goes 30 yards up the pitch and out of danger. He mistimed it by a couple of centimetres, which ultimately meant that it went back on him and back into the goal. So in terms of how bad the error was, if you were going to call it an error, it's minute. However, of course, the outcome was the ultimate punishment. But yeah, I think it does come back to that. It's then, and this is where there always will be a grey area in football, at what point is it a foul and what point isn't it a foul? The fact that he was ever so slightly off balance because the player was there and he's in midair and he gets to the ball first ahead of the player, does therefore that constitute a foul? I know that most outfield players would say no and most goalkeepers would say yes.
I guess it's the midair aspect of that, right? Because if you are an attacker and you're just about to strike a ball and you get a little nudge from an opposing player, that wouldn't be a foul, would it?
Probably not, and the difficulty is, and that's why you can't compare the two, because if I give an obvious example of you put your hands out straight and someone just nudges your hand ever so slightly, that's going to move your hand, which will mean you don't catch the ball. And the difference between, say, heading a ball and catching a ball is completely different. Catching a ball, you need to be absolutely spot on, so crisp with your technique. Whereas if you're heading a ball, you could get a slight nudge and still get your head to it. So you can't really compare, and I think that's the point, and people don't realize, is that it can be the smallest nudge which can just move your hand, which means that you don't catch, or in this case punch it quite like you want to.
Villa 2 Chelsea 1. Kepper on at half time in this one. Thomas Tuchel has said that Mendy has a big pain in his ribs after colliding with the woodwork. He's going to have a scan. They'll find out this week, but there's a Champions League final coming up.
Yeah, it's a big scan that will be. And I'm assuming it happened on the goal. If it didn't, then apologies. But I'm assuming it happened on the goal and he did collide with the post. It's a bit of a scruffy goal in that he didn't quite catch the finish, but it was one of those horrible ones. Mendy, no chance, dipped over him. But you did see that he collided with the post. So hopefully it's not too serious for his sake. Because, yeah, certainly going into the Champions League final, I'm sure that Chelsea would want Mendy fit.
There was a great moment in this game too, where Emi Martinez made a save from Ben Chilwell to keep Villa in front. It wasn't so much the save, although it was a very good save, but the celebration after he'd made the save with the fans.
Yeah, which was interesting. You know, he was pumped up. He looked quite emotional, very happy, which I guess we're going to see more and more, certainly early part of next season, now that fans will start to be back in the stadiums, because it's big. It's, you know, players will have missed that. You know, that feeling of having the roar behind them. And this is obviously with a crowd that's much smaller than it ordinarily would be at each of the various games over the country this weekend. But I can see more and more of that early next season, almost like a new appreciation for having the fans there.
It did feel just a bit different, didn't it? Because they mentioned on commentary, actually, that that's the first time, well, let's not forget, that Emi Martinez has been able to play in front of Aston Villa fans in the ground. So maybe that was something that really affected him, because this is something for new signings this season, and not towards the back end of last season because it was after January, wasn't it? But this season, new signings haven't been able to build that rapport with the crowd yet. So that's something that Emi Martinez is maybe thinking, I need to get this going before the start of next season. But it did feel different with fans in the ground because it has been so long. At times, it was a bit emotional, I think, watching it, just because of the raw emotion that you got from players and fans.
Well, you know, I think the other bit, and this is for me very interesting, and this is certainly a thing, is that there is still a question mark over certain players' heads, certainly players that have broke through this season. because they've done it in a setting that isn't your ordinary setting. So there is certain players, and I know this from certain conversation I've had within the game, that players that have done it over the past year, 18 months, there is going to be the question as to, okay, can you now do it when you've got the increased emotion that comes with playing with fans, which isn't just the excitement of the fans. It's obviously how you process that yourself and what state you're able to get yourself in come game time. It's so much different when you're playing in front of nobody. You know, and it is effectively a reserve game to suddenly playing in front of 70,000 at Man United, 60,000 at St. James's Park, and how that can influence a player. Even seeing Emi Martinez do this, for instance, which, by the way, he's one of those players that I know he's done it at Reading and he's done it in the Championship, but doing it top-end Premier League in front of a crowd, you think he came in, didn't he? Pretty much first game after lockdown, came in for Leno, got injured that game, and has pretty much been an ever-present since, whether that be at Arsenal or Aston Villa. So again, it's going to be very different for him playing in the Premier League in front of a crowd next season.
Manchester City 5, Everton 0, a penalty save for Edison, saving from Gylfi Sigurdsson. Another clean sheet for Edison. He is the Golden Glove winner in the Premier League with 19. That is three more than the closest rival in Edouard Mendy.
I think as much as we gave the award to Vaclav Hladký, there is an argument to say that in terms of a ratio, Edison's won this quite comfortably, hasn't he? Because that will be 19 in 38 games. Did he play every single game? I don't think he did he? Because Zach Steffen played a couple as well. So, you know, it's averaging better than one in two. So for me, yeah, look, fantastic season again from Edison. The perfect way to top it off.
Absolutely. West Ham 3, Southampton 0. A couple of good saves from Lukas Fabianski in this one, but just wanted to bring up the fact that Southampton conceded 68 goals this season. Yeah. That is their worst top flight record in a single season.
Yeah, tough. And I think obviously losing 9-0 again doesn't help when you're talking about how many you've conceded. And you actually look at their goalkeeping situation, it's an interesting one in that you wouldn't necessarily say there's any issues there, where ordinarily when a team's conceded that many, there might be an issue or two in that department. But actually, I know that they flip-flopped a little bit, but on the whole, from what I've seen, out of those 68 goals, I don't think there's that many you can put down to the goalkeepers. But again, it will be interesting to see what they do this summer, because that's certainly an area that Southampton as a team are going to need to focus on. And you just wonder whether that might come back and impact the goalkeepers in any way, but certainly we'll keep an eye on that. But no, to mention the saves, in fact, I realise we're about 15, 20 minutes into this podcast, we actually haven't described a save yet. So let's do that, shall we? But Fabianski, one save in particular I'll touch on, top left, really enjoyed it. Corner came in, I think it was an outswinging corner from memory, but it was more the movement of Fabianski as he started to come towards his near post, got set very, very quickly, timed his set perfectly. So as the ball then came back across him to his left, the power that he showed, and actually for me, bearing in mind that Fabianski is, I want to say late 30s now, I should know his exact age, but I'm going to say late 30s, 37, shall we say? 37,
no,
38?
No, that's a bit older. I'm going to say 33.
Really?
Let's have a look. 36.
There you go. Okay, good. So, okay, good news. So yeah, bearing in mind 36, what he showed for me here was just that explosive power that sometimes can start to go as you get that little bit older. So I think it'd be very interesting for West Ham. And the reason I mentioned that is that we are now going to get into silly season in terms of transfers, rumours. And of course, we've all heard the Sam Johnson to West Ham. In fact, Sam Johnson everywhere rumours at the moment that are circling. But certainly the ones to West Ham are quite strong. And I'd be really interested if that does happen, how that works out. Because I think Fabianski this season, for them to finish where they have, for him to be as good as he's been, he certainly isn't going to give up that shirt without a fight. And, you know, I think most West Ham fans, there's very little in terms of negatives that you can say about Fabianski this season. So if they do bring in Sam Johnston, it will be fascinating.
Speaking of Sam Johnston, West Brom lost their final game of the Premier League campaign at Leeds. What a campaign for Leeds. What a campaign for Ian Melier. Didn't play yesterday. Hasn't actually played the last few games for Leeds. Kiko Kassia has been in instead. A comfortable win for Leeds. And the goal, the free kick from Calvin Phillips. It took a big bounce, but you just sense that Sam Johnston knew he probably should have saved it.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Again, I know I feel like I say that with most errors, but the truth is that most goals that don't look particularly good, there's often a reason behind it. And for me, this one, it was a good free kick in that he's got a lot of movement on the ball. And not necessarily movement in terms of it moving all over the place, but more so the fact that there was a lot of topspin on the ball. So the technique's good, gets it up and over the wall, and it really fires into the turf with a lot of topspin. And I think the bounce, that was a difficulty for Sam Johnston, in that you've got to gauge the bounce in order to then get the parry to put it around the post. And you actually consider the various aspects to this, it's quite tough, because not only are you having to gauge where it's going to bounce off the deck, which can be affected by how greasy the surface is, whether there is any wind. If it's dry, of course, you're going to get more grip on the turf and it's going to get slightly more of a bounce. So there is a lot that you need to compute within a split second. And then also the angle it's coming up, it's a little bit unusual to then have to then parry it round the post. You consider the angle that you need. You almost need to be on top of the ball to an extent to then guide it round the post. So it's a very, very difficult technique. And he has just ever so slightly misjudged it. It's as simple as that. He's gone slightly too low. He's hit the top of his hand and ended up going over his hand and into the goal. But it's, again, it's minuscule, but these are the fine margins.
A few more games to finish. Wolves 1, Manchester United 2, Sheffield United 1, Burnley 0 and Fulham 0, Newcastle 2. Let's start with Manchester United and the fact that Dean Henderson was back in for the final game of the season. It's 3 days until the Europa League final. What does that mean? Because in the games prior, David De Gea had come back in.
What does it mean? I don't think it necessarily means a lot. I think this game is a game where they'd finish second regardless. I know they wanted to keep their unbeaten away record, which, by the way, is phenomenal. I didn't realise that until I saw the post from Dean Henderson afterwards. And made me realise, was it lost 6 at home? Is that correct? Which is extraordinary, really. And a huge credit to, well, United, I suppose, Dean Henderson and David De Gea for that record. To go unbeaten away from home is excellent. But does it mean much in terms of the final? No, I don't think so. If anything, it might make me think that De Gea is likely to play the final, you know, and they would have gone with Henderson in this one, knowing that it was last Premier League game, not a lot riding on it. And of course, De Gea will then, you would think, come back in. He has played the majority of the Europa League games, obviously, certainly recently since Henderson's been playing more in the Premier League. So my gut would say that it'll be David De Gea in the final.
It just feels like the tide has turned back in De Gea's favour as well. I don't actually, after the Liverpool game, and there was a lot of talk, wasn't there, which we didn't actually speak about on the podcast because it occurred at a time when we weren't recording. But that final goal from Mo Salah, Dean Henderson received a bit of criticism on that. And since that game, De Gea has been the goalkeeper in favour.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, like I said, we didn't touch on that goal, obviously, because of the time in that game in particular. But it was, I mean, that last goal, just to touch on it, I suppose it's never too late, is it? It was a strange one, or it's an interesting one for me, in that ordinarily you'd come up the line a little bit more in order to spread. But I think we're seeing goalkeepers do that a little bit more, stay a bit deeper, because I think old school goalkeepers are coming a long way out and ordinarily strikers are going round them and placing it in an empty net. What he has done is made Salah finish. The argument against, of course, is when you are reasonably deep like that, it gives Salah a big area to aim at. So I can understand why a few people did ask a couple of questions. But look, it's been a fascinating situation all season. I think on the whole, it's been a very positive season for Dean Henderson, in that he, for a large part, has managed to oust David De Gea and played a lot of games, probably more games than would have been expected when those two were going up against each other at the start of the season. However, we have touched on this before, but I'm convinced that something's going to happen there this summer. It has to, really. I just can't see it being those two next season. I think it will be a different combination. I know there's all sorts of rumours at the moment, but yeah, I'll be shocked if it were those two again next season.
Okay, Marek Rodak with his second Premier League game of the season for Fulham. Alphonse Areola picking up a player of the season accolade. So it'll be interesting, again, we've spoken about this before, to see what happens next season. Highly unlikely that Areola will stay at the club. Highly likely that Rodak will be the number one in the Championship. And a really good end of the season for Aaron Ramsdale. Again, we've spoken about that at length in recent podcasts. But Nick Pope is to undergo surgery on a knee injury, which has kept him out of the past few games. Sean Dyche revealed this yesterday. He hasn't played for the last 3 games. Is he going to be a doubt for the Euros?
Well, it sounds like that could be the case, which, yeah, will be gutting for him. I mean, I get the impression, and again, something we've mentioned many times on the pod, but you get the impression that the tide has turned back in Jordan Pickford's favour. But there was a long time where I think it had gone towards Nick Pope, and you felt that he was perhaps front-running. But certainly now, if he's got that injury, it will mean that, of course, Jordan Pickford will start for England. And it's a fascinating summer for Nick Pope on the whole as well, in that, of course, there will be loads more rumours this summer, as there have been for the last couple of summers. But certainly this summer, more than ever, you feel, given that I'm sure he doesn't have that long left on his Burnley contract. And given that there might be a bit of a shake-up with some of the the sort of top six clubs, you just feel that he's going to be in the mix.
Let's quickly go through the playoff semi-finals. We'll start in League Two, and what a game last night between Forest Green Rovers and Newport County. Forest Green winning the game 4-3, but Newport with a goal right at the death from Nicky Maynard to win 5-4. Incredible game in quite horrendous conditions at the New Lawn.
It really was horrendous conditions, which is why I'm slightly reluctant to speak about the goalkeepers too much, because I would have absolutely hated playing in those conditions. But we'll just touch on a couple of bits. As mentioned, very, very tough night for both goalkeepers. Firstly, just to mention Tom King, who, by the way, has been brilliant since he stepped back in, and going into the final, you can sense he's really got the bit between his teeth. A couple of goals that I'll mention, though, that I think, for me, they're goals that on another day he saves, but this is where I think the conditions played a major part, and also poor officiating, it has to be said, because there was the free kick, for those that haven't seen it was the classic one, free kick whipped in, it ends up going in the far post, but it is one that you just feel that had the conditions not been as they were, had the player, of course, who was offside, not been interfering, this would have been quite a comfortable one for Tom King, but in the end he wasn't able to get to the initial ball. And there was another one just before that where, again, I think on an ordinary day the ball pitches and you make the save, but it's kind of skidded through, the surface wasn't great given all the rain that had come down, and it really affected the goalkeepers. And similarly, I looked at the one that Luke McGee conceded, and when we're talking about it, we're saying, oh, could he have done better? Like, it doesn't look great. It's a shot from 20 yards that's effectively gone quite central.
The goal from Ellison you're talking about.
Yeah, that's effectively hit the bar and gone in. And it's, I can't help but feel it's got to be conditions related, you know, because it doesn't look like he gets particularly close to it, yet it effectively lobs him. And this is a guy that's, what, 6'2", 6'3", if not bigger. So yeah, it was a very strange one for me. And as I say, I'm reluctant to go into too much detail, purely for the fact that it was a horrendous night. But in the end, a very successful night for Tom King and Newport, who will go on into the final.
They will, where they will meet Morecambe and Carl Letheren. What a goalkeeper this man has been this season. He joined Morecambe on a short-term deal, I think. He was playing in the National League with Chesterfield. He's come in, he's been so incredibly commanding, as he showed in their draw with Tranmere, which puts them through to the final. He could be playing League One football next season. It just goes to show, doesn't it, the life of a goalkeeper.
It does. And I mean, look, we've given so many different examples of goalkeepers that can jump a couple of levels very quickly if a couple of the right things happen. And I think this is something that I'll often speak with goalkeepers about, even goalkeepers that may be getting into their late 20s or early 30s and kind of feeling that maybe their chance has gone. The way that goalkeeping is so different to outfield is that as a goalkeeper, you can perhaps go in as a third choice somewhere and maybe climb a couple of levels by doing that. And of course, once you're in that particular vehicle, once you've joined that club that's a couple of levels up, then ultimately it's about doing your work internally. Can you then go from 3 to 2, 2 to 1? Sometimes it can happen very quickly. I remember once when I was a number 3 and there were 2 injuries within a week and suddenly you're playing. But this is another great story of how it can happen in a more conventional way, in that you get your move maybe up one level and then on the back of that gain a promotion, and then suddenly not only are you jumping 2 levels, but you're doing it as a number 1.
In League One, a crazy second leg between Oxford United and Blackpool. Blackpool going through to the final in that one. And Sunderland Lincoln. Let's talk about yet another loan move for Joseph Bursic. You can imagine Lee Johnson absolutely boiling up at this one. He wasn't happy that Bursic had gone on loan to Peterborough with a few games left of the campaign. He certainly, I'd imagine, wasn't too happy that he'd gone on loan to Lincoln, but he kept a clean sheet in that first game, Lincoln taking that advantage into the second leg where they lost, but went through on aggregate 3-2. Alex Palmer coming back in with a bit of pressure, probably, because of the performance that Joe Bursic put in, but he performed well.
He did, yeah. There was one moment, one nervy moment, when you wondered whether he might give away a penalty or not.
It was a penalty, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, I'm going to always stick up for the goalkeeper on this one, but he was a long way out and there was a little bit of contact, and certainly that could have changed things had it have been given. But no, to touch on Joe Bursic, and it's a lad that I work quite closely with, delighted for him. Again, he was fantastic, bearing in mind that he hadn't been training since he finished up with Stoke and Peterborough the week or two before. So he'd gone a reasonably long time without having done any training sessions. So just to step into a game like that, to show that kind of mentality, and it sums him up as a lad, where, you know, he got the call, do you fancy it? Didn't even question it straight away. Yep, let's do it. got himself ready and just went and played the game, which for me, the mentality shown is superb. That being said, I've made my thoughts known. I'm not too sure about this whole emergency loan rule, because this is another great example of, they've already gone with a lone goalkeeper in the shape of Alex Palmer. So they're paying minimal contribution, I'm sure, in their goalkeeping department as it is. Now, suddenly Alex Palmer goes down and you're able to bring in a Joseph Bursic. Something doesn't seem quite right. And the reason it isn't right is that if you're a club down the other end of the table, and I know this actually happened, more often than not, Stoke will say no. If it was a mid-table or a low-end team that wanted to do that emergency loan, it probably doesn't benefit a Joseph Bursic. So suddenly being in the position that a Lincoln are in, it benefits them. It benefits Joseph Bursic because, again, everyone's seen just how good he is and just how exciting his career looks. But it can't be right for the teams that have signed two legitimate goalkeepers and paid maybe quite a lot of money in order to have two first-choice goalkeepers on their books. They're the ones that are now being punished by this rule. It just, yeah, it doesn't quite sit right with me. Yeah, despite the fact that obviously I do work with Joseph and we helped take him into Lincoln.
The landscape be a changing, Richard. Mm. Interesting times in the world of goalkeeping. And the Championship playoffs, Swansea going through, just narrowly edging Barnsley, one apiece on the day, but 2-1 on aggregate. And Brentford going through to the playoff final yet again. Will they be triumphant for the first time in their history? But I want to talk about Asmir Begovic in this one. He listens to the show, so no doubt he's listening to this one right now. He seemed incredibly pumped. I don't know whether this is what we were alluding to earlier with fans being back in the ground, but he was really pumped up for this one.
Yeah, he was. You can see how much this meant to him. And knowing Asmir as we do, you just wonder if there was a bit of thought behind this in order to create that little bit of spice, which maybe was needed for his team at that particular time. And of course, you know, it was obviously made that much harder when they went down to 10 men. They were always going to be massively up against it. When you've got a Brentford team playing the style of football that they do, it's going to be relentless pressure. And my gut says that Asmir was just trying to get a bit of a rise from his team, trying to maybe impact the crowd in some way. Again, it's hard to know, and I actually haven't spoke to him about this, but that's what my gut says, is that, look, sometimes if the tide is against you, if things are going badly, then something needs to change. Now, it's not always easy to know what that change is, but something, anything, doesn't matter sometimes, but just find a way to turn the tide. And I just wonder whether it was along the lines of that, because I've seen it a few times, and we know that Asmir Begovic is certainly one of the most emotionally intelligent goalkeepers that I've seen. One of the biggest compliments I can give him is just how calm he is when he plays, and he gives off that real aura of being a very calm, in control goalkeeper. So when I'm watching this, I can't help but feel that it is calculated in some way.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Finishing on a couple of keeper capers. The first one is regarding Roman Bürki of Borussia Dortmund, who allowed Lars Bender of Bayer Leverkusen his final kick of his career to score with a penalty. Now, I'd like to get your thoughts on this. It's all quite lighthearted, and we did put this out on Twitter, and actually I'll read the responses that we got from people just to say what they thought of the fact that Bürki basically allowed Bender to score. Dan Clark, I'm not having that at all. It's not a kickabout down the park, it's professional football. Also, if I'm Lars Bender, I'd be annoyed Bürki didn't even attempt to save it. Don't get me started on the high fives. Baldy says, gave him no chance, power, accuracy, simple as. Pete Deller, I've seen keepers make as little effort as that when there was no sentiment involved. Most of the moaning seems to be about wrecking bets. English football can't handle niceness. Neil Winter, if the keeper had dived the other way, there would be no questions. @_cabbers, it's a nice gesture, which I think is still allowed. Joe Griffith, disrespectful to the game of football. Brian Tucker, a shambles, that is. Embarrassing. Ross Kearns, well done the goalie. Why dive when going to score anyway? Want to see more of this. And Scott Patterson says, no issues, respect for a German footballing icon and role model. Nice to see appreciation on the field.
Yeah. Interesting. But you know, it's fascinating by the number of responses and just how different they are. And I think that's the point. It's all perspective. I mean, for me, how do I feel? And I'm trying to consider who it would be. Who would the English equivalent be, Matthew? Who would you have as the English equivalent that might be
So you might have had, for example, a Gareth Barry that might have stepped up what back end of last season to take a penalty.
Yeah, and then the goalkeeper might be a Joe Hart or someone like that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then if a Joe Hart then just allows Gareth Barry to score, what are we saying? Are we like, yeah, lovely gesture, Gareth Barry, legend of the game, et cetera, or are we saying, come on, Joe? Like, I think part of me feels that if I was in goal, I would almost want it to be, it's like, this is your last meaningful contribution in the game of football. Let's have a challenge. Come on, it's me v you. One more time, almost, and have it like that. Like, I am going to do absolutely everything to save it. So if you do score, you're going to get even more satisfaction from the fact that you've gone out, you've bowed out, scoring against me, going full stretch to my right, or whatever it might be. Whereas this is just a bit like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is the better outcome.
Yeah,
it's better to actually have a, you've entered into football for competition, for trying to win, to try and outdo your opponent. So like you said, just give it one more go, and if you don't score, you don't score, you don't take the penalties anyway. So I don't think he does anyway, but yeah, give it one last go. I'm trying to think of another example now you've said that. I think Stuart Pearce had this in his final game, and I think the goalkeeper, it might have been Dave Besson, and they had an agreement where Besant said to him, listen, I'm going to go to my right or my left, just slip it in that corner. But Pearce, being Pearce, just went and did his own thing and blasted it over the bar. His final professional game. I'm pretty sure that's that what happened. So there are examples where this has happened before, but I think you're right. Yeah, I think compete, go at it.
I think it'd just be, even before the penalty's taken, go up and have a word and say, look, this is it. We know what this is. Like, this is it. Come on, one last time. And just seeing how it plays out. But I mean, look, I get it. At the same time, he's intentionally meant for it to be a nice gesture. So looking at it like that, and the fact that he has intended for it to be that, you can only really say well done, I guess, because the intention is a positive one. It is a pure one. But yeah, for me, I would have definitely taken the situation differently.
Okay, we've got one more.
Yep.
This happened in Argentina. Oh, quite remarkable. Remarkable. It was a Copa Libertadores game. River Plate had 20 players out with COVID. Yeah. That included all four of their goalkeepers. They had to play Enzo Perez, their midfielder, in goal. They had no substitutes. They won the game 2-1 against Santa Fe. And old Enzo was man off. MOM.
I mean, yeah. Well, he wasn't man of the match.
He was.
Let's be honest. He wasn't man of the match. We've watched the footage. We've watched the footage, and it's exactly as you'd imagine it to be. It's somebody that's never played in goal, not using any goalkeeping techniques somehow. And this is where this other team they were playing against, what their name again?
Santa Fe.
I mean, come on. Come on. You barely had a shot of any note over the 90 minutes. Like, obviously, the one that was conceded, in fairness, he had no chance. Other than that, there was a cross that came in that he kind of shoveled around the post. There was a shot from 40 yards, which he kind of got down in installments to his left and parried around the post. It looked horrendous. It looked really, really bad. And yet they've somehow won the game. And for me, if you're Santa Fe, you've got to be going to that change room afterwards and asking yourself some serious questions. I'm really annoyed by it.
You
really annoyed.
You hate this, don't you? You hate it when an outfielder goes in goal.
The fact they gave him man of the match. Please look. If you've got a spare 5 minutes today, log into this game, tune into this game on YouTube, isn't it, I believe, and just watch the goalkeeping performance and let us know your thoughts. For me, it winds me up that they've put him in goal first and foremost. Like, I get they kind of had to because of the COVID situation. Fine. So it winds me up that he's then playing in goal and done all the techniques wrong, looked pretty atrocious throughout the game, yet they've won and they've given him man of the match. And no doubt you get all the silly comments that you always get when an outfield player goes in goal that made it look easy, you know, goalkeeping isn't that tough, etc., etc. Whereas actually, if he'd have faced a half-decent shot, he would have conceded.
Well, they've missed a trick, haven't they?
Go on.
Why, oh why, they didn't get on the blower to Joe Bursic, I've got no idea. Get him in on an emergency loan. He's available, people. That's the end of that, Richard.
It is indeed. We are back next week, aren't we?
We are back indeed.
You just keep me informed. Just
thank
keep
you.
Me in the loop.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're going to take another rest, Richard.
Ah.
We've got the boy Kaleth.
Ah, did he, which part? The keepers or the away?
The away.
Okay.
Always the same. Always the same.
Put my feet on.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers.